The Daily Connect podcast.
And it's Tuesday, the 4th of December 2018. And Stephen Scott here with you on the Daily Connect podcast. Hello. Thank you so much for downloading. Coming up, we are going to find out about our Society of the Week. This week, it is the Torch Trust. You may have heard us talk to Sheila Armstrong from the Torch Trust regularly. Well, today we're going to hear from another member of the team who tells us about their befriending service, which is very interesting at this time of year to learn about. That's on the way. Also, we get some tech talk with one of our tech talk listeners, Wayne, who got in touch to tell us all about a Braille dictionary that he's developing for the Amazon Echo. Incredible. And we're going to hear from Paul Smythe as well. He's from Barclays. He's in our Connect conversation today as I talk to him about working in the banking sector as a visually impaired guy. But first, we find out about some new assistive transport that is being suggested and ways to make transport more accessible in Wales. Our own Lynn Morgan has been finding out more.
We've launched our audio guide, which is to help people with sight loss. And we're trying to raise awareness of the assisted travel service that we and all train companies in the UK provide. So the audio guide is available to download from our website. You can also look at it on your mobile phone. And it just basically takes you through planning your journey. It tells you what facilities are available on stations or on trains, what kind of help you might expect. And it's all been done to try and to improve people's journey experience, really, and to make things as easy as possible. So we've been working for the last 12 months. We've had an assisted travel focus group, which is a small team within the business, which has been looking at the way we've been delivering assisted travel. But through my own work in going out to meeting groups that support disabled people, found that an audio guide would be really helpful so that people could understand what kind of help we could provide. So it's been about 10, 11 months work, which we've done internally with two other colleagues. It's live now. We do have some on USB sticks, which can be played on USB players. But the good thing is that it's on the website, and any changes that need to be made, we can change the audio files and people can then download them and refresh their digital media player. It's just one part of a number of measures that we're introducing to make travel more accessible. So it could be things like new footbridges, new ramps. Staff training is important. People know that in the next few years there's new trains coming online. So the audio guide plays an important part in all of that, and bringing it all together will make people's journey experiences a lot better. Well, my colleague John, who sat here with us today, has tested them for us.
Section 9. Will someone help me on and off the train? At stations with staff, they will help you on or off, regardless of the operator of that train.
Okay, my name is John, and I work in the customer relations department. I'm the only VI employee in the company. So obviously within my work, I use a lot of software, and so I have to use a screen reader. Now, I'm a Dolphin screen reader for those people that use it, but I also use iOS on my iPhone, and I've also in the past been a trainer with things like JAWS and other softwares. So what I've been able to do here is when the recordings have come down from Geraint, he's passed a link over to me, and I've gone onto the website and then tested them. And one or two things we've developed, and we've looked at it to see how accessible the software is and how easy to use the different players are as well. And what we opted for eventually was to break the files down into individual sections of the book, so that what happens is that people go through the website, they can either use the link jump, or they can go through on the normal search proceeding, depending on which way they're going to use it, either with the cursor keys or with tab keys, and they find the individual sections. And what we've done is we've allowed the system to use people's onboard players. So whatever they use as their default MP3 player will start up once they activate that link.
Would you tell me about your sight loss, John?
Yes, I was born with congenital cataracts. And when I was about 40, I had my lenses replaced. So I've actually got more sight now than I used to have. But at one time, I was very reliant on a full screen reading system, so I couldn't really see the screen. But nowadays, I've got a bit more sight, so I'm able to get the best of both worlds, really. I will certainly be advising other people that's out there, and I can also say to people, look, it does work well. It works on iOS very well. It's very, very accessible. In fact, it works on iOS extremely well, better than other systems. So if people are iPhone users, I would certainly recommend that that should be their main way of actually accessing the software, because it does work nicely with the iOS, with the MP3 player on there. You can flick and pause and whatever, and you can get back to the page easily so that you can jump to the next chapter. So it is very, very friendly in that respect.
Section 10, Assistance Dogs Scheme. We have developed a scheme in partnership with Assistance Dogs UK. Adran 10, Cynllun Cŵn Cymorth. Rydym wedi datblygu cynllun mewn partneriaeth ag Assistance Dogs UK.
So there you go, and you can find out more by going to rnib.org.uk to find out more about that, and also search for Transport for Wales to find out more about the new audio guide.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Time to get into our Connect conversation this week, and I got a chance to sit down with Paul Smythe. He is visually impaired, and he works at Barclays. And I joined him at the recent TechShare Pro exhibition in London to find out more about what he does in his job.
As the digital accessibility head, we want to make sure that all our digital services and content, so websites, apps, cash machines and kiosks, are available to and usable by as many people as possible. So I and my team in accessibility, we spend a lot of time making sure that everything we change and build and buy in the bank, we do it in an accessible way. And maybe probably a bit differently, for us, accessibility means ensuring that all folks can use our products and services or be employed by us, you know, regardless of ability, situation or circumstance. So I might be severely sight impaired, right, as someone with a permanent impairment, but we're also conscious that actually we're all impaired from time to time, situationally or environmentally, you know, bright sunlight on a screen. So we don't really see it just narrowly as disability, but creating a sort of great experience for a greater number of people. So really about inclusive design.
Now, you're visually impaired yourself, as you say, severely sight impaired, but your remit, I guess, covers all disabilities?
Yes, yeah, that's absolutely right. And maybe sort of background for me, Stephen, you know, I joined Barclays and I've worked as a decade as the blind accountant or interest rate risk hedger. And for the last few years, I've led our accessibility efforts for the bank. And I think that's really helpful, right, having that personal perspective. So I have Stargardt, so, you know, I have been an ex-guide dog user, you know, out and about somewhere unfamiliar when I would use a cane to get around, and I'm aware of the strengths that folks with impairments bring to the workplace. So that kind of creativity, pragmatism, problem solving and general resistance and persistence, which is hugely useful for me. You know, I chair our visual impairment staff network as well. So having some of that insight really helps shape what we do for accessibility. So I guess getting back to the role, you know, I kind of describe, I wear three hats. There's the police officer hat, so making sure when we change and build stuff projects, we do it and, you know, consider and deliver accessibility. There's a kind of trainer hat about training and tools for our sort of thousands of staff so they think about and have empathy around accessibility. And then third, there's the sort of, you know, evangelist and innovation. How can new shiny tech solve some of the challenges faced by folks with impairment? So it's really, really exciting, really wide-ranging, but there is that point there that having people with a diverse perspective, really important, especially when we think about a typical, you know, corporate stuffy environments, to kind of have that inclusive mindset.
I mean, we're standing here in the Barclays HQ and Canary Wharf, it's, you know, a reasonably decent day for British standards. And, you know, it's interesting standing here in this building where lots of people doing very different jobs and very busy people at their jobs. And, of course, I then think about the number of blind and partially sighted people who aren't in work. Now, you and I have managed to get out and burst through that and actually get a job. How difficult was it to sort of push your way in? Did you feel that was the case, or did you just get the job?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm very old. This is going back several years.
How old are you?
Oh, gosh.
So you have to think about it. That's not great.
Yeah, exactly. Where are my keys? So late 30s. So I think when I started, you know, the hiring folks, they saw my strengths rather than being worried and concerned and stressed about my disabilities. You know, which is fab, and I do everything I can in shaping our disability staff network to build that peer support group around disability and mental health so that we're more open and we remove a negative stigma and we create an environment where we bring more and more folks with different impairments in. And again, you know, I sit on, as well as being an accessibility lead at Barclays, lots of different panels with lots of different charities, and I'm acutely aware, right, you know, is it 3/4 of visually impaired folks now unemployed? And when I kind of think about this, you know, many businesses are freaked out, you know, there's the fear factor and negative attitudes. And I think about there's some awesome vision impaired students coming up, and academically they're great, but sometimes they struggle with confidence, with role models, with work experience. You know, gosh, trying to get work experience if you need some screen readers and bits and bobs and adjustments, let's face it, to shine, to show what you can do, is still a real struggle. So we have a series of schemes in Barclays, as you know, most big companies will have apprentice schemes and internships and graduates, and we have, you know, those that we make sure that mainstream routes are inclusive, but we also know that sometimes we have to go out of our way and create sort of dedicated schemes that focus on getting in great disability talent that would otherwise be kind of skipped over.
So, you know, your experience here has obviously been a positive one. How many years have you been here now?
Oh, about 15 years.
Right, okay. How has accessibility technology itself changed for you, and not just on a personal level, but from a professional point of view, the amount of technology that's now accessible? How has that changed your job and that of your colleagues?
Yeah, sure. So maybe thinking about it for colleagues first. So I am fortunate enough now to lead our reasonable adjustments program. So the added sort of help and support, kit and equipment that we give to folks with injury, ill health, impairment, so that they can crack on and be the best, be effective and productive in the workplace. And, you know, on a personal level, I have big monitors and monitor arms and Zoom text and Jaws and whatever else. And it's now a lot easier to get that. We have central dedicated teams and funding that, you know, takes away that burden from individuals and managers in figuring out how to do that. So I think for staff, that's making things a lot easier, that they can get their hands on the tools they need to succeed. But just as important is the culture, right, about the how I work, whether it might be difficult getting to lots of different offices or places, or reminding people when I go to a meeting room, you know, I can't see who's around there, and having a team member or a manager pipe up and say, okay, we've got, you know, Tom, Dick and Harry in the room, whatever. The things don't take for granted, you know, about giving me paperwork. So the way we view this, it's not reasonable adjustments, because that's quite legalistic. It's about workplace adjustments. Now, having that process and funding, and how we sort of record that. So it's what tools Paul, as a visually impaired folk, may need, but it's also the how he chooses to work and communicate and whatever else that's the other half that's often neglected. So that's kind of how tech and things are changing on the colleague side. I think for customers, gosh, when I started in accessibility 5-6 years back, you know, we did some fab work with RNIB in response to the Make Money Talk campaign. So this is about making sure that our ATMs talk, and, you know, great collaboration, really interesting, you know, for low and no sight customers or folks with print difficulties, that they could for the first time independently get cash out. And as a bank, we saw lots of customers vote with their feet. And, you know, switch bank, because we were more accommodating, welcoming, ultimately we cared. So really we saw then that accessibility was kind of good for business, but good for society. And that's really created a snowball effect now of what more we could be doing. So we have, you know, regular catch-ups with the RNIB folks to understand what are the sort of general challenges that visually impaired folks face in everyday life, and what are the specific issues they face in doing their banking, and how can RNIB and others and charities kind of help keep us honest and grounded on what works, what doesn't, what more we all need to kind of work together to do. So maybe, you know, how has tech helped? And thinking about visually impaired bank customers in particular. So I think we're one of the few banks to have high visibility debit cards. So where, you know, my bank card, we offer them accessible versions. So high vis, bright colours, bright arrows, notch is cut out the side, even a 3-digit security code are bigger and bolder. And we also offer a way of kind of creating an alternative format to that in large print or braille if you go into a Barclays bank branch, so that you don't have to memorise each and every debit or credit card you have. So simple things like that. The move to sort of mobile and online banking too, a lot of the work we do working with charities at RNIB and AbilityNet is around ensuring that we get real world folks with disabilities to help kick the tyres on and make sure that our websites, our mobile apps, are, you know, give a great experience to a greater number of people. So they, you know, they are accessibility compliant, but they are usable because we're getting a whole wide range of disabled folks to help give us that feedback on them. So we're really proud to get our apps and websites accredited by AbilityNet for the last few years. And really, we're here today at TechShare Pro, and some of the new updates that we're talking about over and above what vision impaired folks have come to appreciate about simpler security. You know, your fingerprint or your face is your password if you come into our mobile banking app. We've been given updates here today on our mobile check imaging. So now, as visually impaired Paul, I can take a snapshot of a paper check and I can have it processed and paid far quicker than it would take me to go to the bank branch. So convenient for some, but actually quite transformational for others. We've also sort of talked to you about, you know, video banking helps people with a range of impairments to have that personal touch in FaceTime, or maybe if you're reliant on lip reading too. Yeah. And I think one of the biggies that folks really needed help with over recent months has been around sort of money management tools. And maybe we can all appreciate, if, you know, folks use screen readers, if you're on a website or an app, it's quite difficult to understand the transaction history in your bank balance, this like list of cryptic clues and bank balances, and it may or may not work with your screen reader.
Mine's not very cryptic, they all say Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Fair enough. So we've been looking at, well, how can we do that? How can we sort of visualize and present that in different ways? So yes, need to keep doing what we're doing and have it accessible in tables, but in accessible graphs, showing you the sort of month-for-month trends, using AI to categorize up the spend. So you can see in a month, how much have you spent on your bills, on food, on going crazy on Black Friday, or, you know, whatever it might be, which kind of, you know, is really helping. I think maybe that the sort of final point for your viewers to really hit home about is around sort of open banking. And this term kind of bores people to tears if you don't work in banking. But the premise of open banking legislation that came in earlier this year is it says that a customer that has several bank accounts and they would otherwise have to go and log on online in several different places, those bank accounts, well, they own their financial data, so they can choose to, with the right permissions, to take their financial data from each of those three banks and group it and view it in one consolidated place with one bank. And that's super powerful, where I know when I speak to lots of vision impaired customers or colleagues that accessibility of banking sites is quite mixed. And now for the first time, you know, people don't have to use our bank site or app, but they can choose to. So it gives kind of more choice for customers and it gives more competition for the banks to make sure that, you know, their site is as usable and accessible as possible. So hugely exciting to see, again, how VisionMed customers will, you know, will view that and will vote with their feet and, you know, will hopefully give more feedback, you know, on which sites they like and which they don't.
Paul, thank you so much for allowing us in today. Clearly, I'm not a security risk, which is fantastic. It's always nice to get that information. And also, the lasagna was lovely. I loved that. And one final question I've got for you, Paul. Is there a vault in here, and what's the code?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I wish there was. No, a sort of funny story about that. You know, we are standing in a sort of skyscraper in Canary Wharf is about sort of 30-odd floors. And I am I'm quite a down-to-earth guy, and I'm always quite apologetic when people come in here because I think of the film Shrek and Lord Farquaad, that the sort of people that build these huge buildings, you know, like it's all marble and large. And, you know, again, often when you actually come in and speak to some of the people, it's, again, you know, it's kind of appearances and all quite grounded.
That's the impression I got today, and it's been very, very good being here. So thank you, Paul Smythe. I really appreciate your time.
Cool. Thanks, Stephen.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, regular listeners will know Sheila Armstrong from the Torch Trust, who regularly joins us on the programme. Well, the Torch Trust is an organisation for those of different faiths, but also those who are disabled. And it's a charity that is offering befriending at this time of year. Barry Snell has been finding out more.
I'm delighted to be joined now by Jan Turner. Jan is from the charity Torch Trust, the Christian charity, and she's on today to talk about special telephone befriending services over the Christmas period. So, Jan, tell us more.
Well, we have a befriending telephone service, which at Torch we call Torch Talk, and it's very similar to the talk and support service that the R&RB run. But because we're a Christian-based charity, obviously our groups are Christian-based, but not exclusively so. And we have a number of groups, including ones that are going to run at Christmas. They're just one-off groups. And it's just to give people a chance to pause and think about the true meaning of Christmas. And we'll have some carols and some readings and a bit of discussion. And those groups, they're just one-off groups, and you can choose in participating in the group. Anyone visually impaired can participate. And they're on the 19th or the 20th of December at 11 o'clock.
Explain how they work, please, Jan.
Right, so what happens is you ring Torch and you get listed as wanting to participate in the group because we only have so many lines that we can use. And then you ring a telephone number. You can ring from a mobile if it's easier for you. And then you dial a code and you're in the group. And you're given that telephone number and the code by client services at Torch. And I'll give you the number at the end of this interview.
Now, Jan, you are blind yourself. How important is such a group like this for people, especially at this time of year?
Well, I think there's a lot of loneliness amongst everybody really in society at the moment, but particularly amongst blind people, especially those who have recently lost their sight, because in a way I was fortunate in that I've always been blind, so I've got used to being blind right from a child. But it's so difficult for people to adjust who have recently lost their sight. And people can't get out, or their care services may change, or their family may not be with them at Christmas. So it's a time when we really specially offer a telephone service, but we have, you know, other groups as well that we offer all the year round, telephone groups. But at Christmas, we specially want to bring something into people's homes where they can feel as if they got a friendly voice at the end of their phone, that they can talk to a group of people, like-minded people, because we're all visually impaired who participates in the group.
And what sort of things would you be talking about?
Well, we'd be talking about how it is for people's Christmases in the past, and about the true meaning of Christmas, and whether people, that sort of thing. So it'll be an interactive kind of group, as well as hearing a few carols and some Bible readings.
So obviously the Torch Trust is a Christian organisation, as you mentioned. Can you talk about some of the things you do there, please?
Yeah, sure. We have other telephone groups for a start. We have groups for men and women. We have Bible study groups, and we have a prayer group. We have a technology group that we've just started. And we've also just started a seasonal Advent group that runs for another 3 weeks. But also we have other services. We have magazines and a library service, free library service. People can buy as well resources that Torch have produced, and they produced materials in large print, braille and audio, both USB and DAISY formats. Then also, we have a service now that you can request a book. We can't guarantee 100% whether you can have that book, but our resources manager applies to the publisher, and they send the files to Torch, and then we can transcribe it into your format that you require, especially things like courses that churches are doing. We do that. And then there's also some daily reading material that people like to use in conjunction with the Bible. And we have a large print daily reading system and an audio one as well.
So a lot of different activities, Jan, for people to try out.
Definitely. It's certainly worth ringing Torch, even if you're not interested in the actual telephone service. There may well be another service that support you. Also, over the country, we have around 50 local groups that are run by volunteers that people can go to. Some people find it very difficult to go into a church. And so we have other groups so that blind people can meet together on a face-to-face service.
Just an alternative way of showing their faith.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. We're also into the old social media with Facebook and that sort of thing as well.
So can you tell us again when the Christmas special groups will be taking place?
So the Christmas groups are on the 19th or the 20th of December. That's on the Wednesday before Christmas and the Thursday before Christmas. It's 11 o'clock in the morning till 12. I'm the actual facilitator for that, so I'll enjoy meeting up with you if you'd like to ring in to join that group.
And if anyone is interested, Jan, what are the contact details, please?
I'll give it to you slowly and I'll give it to you twice so you get a chance to write it down,
please.
Hopefully. So the telephone number is 01858, that's Market Harbour code, and then the number is 438260. So that's 01858 438260.
And can we have the Torch Trust website address as well, please?
It's www.torchtrust.org.
Jan Turner from the charity Torch Trust, thanks for coming on and telling us about the telephone befriending service.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
The Daily Connect podcast.
And finally this week, we get some Tech Talk news ahead of our episode, which went on air at 1 o'clock today. Of course, you can download it right now on the RNIB Tech Talk podcast. One of the interesting features that we do regularly is our emails. We get lots of your emails in, and some of you send audio contributions. Well, Wayne got in touch with me, Sean and Tim to tell us about his new idea, and that is to make Braille more accessible through an Amazon Echo.
Hello everyone once again. Yes, it's your favourite presenter, Lady Lorraine. Before I start, can I just say a quick hello to my lovely bonnie wee Charlie, sighty guy Chris, such a lovely young man. Well, Wayne has something very exciting to bring you in the saga of the Shortcut Adventure. Stephen was mentioning how it can be difficult to get support with learning Braille. So, Wayne thought that a great tool to use with Shortcuts would be to build a talking Braille dictionary so that a learner could ask Siri for the Braille code for the letters they're learning. Amazingly, Wayne has done a fairly reasonable job at building this talking Braille dictionary. Luckily, he does know Braille from making sure he had it in his toolbox as his own RP progressed. At the moment, Wayne has entered the alphabet and initial punctuation into the Shortcut dictionary, but this can be added to include all Braille cells with a bit of time spent to enter them. The great thing is that this shortcut could be shared with anyone who wants it through the Shortcut Share function. This is a clear demonstration of the difference between Google and Lady A devices and the real potential of Siri as a mobile and customizable interactive device. Oh, if the RNIB or NFB or any of the Canadian or Australian societies want to buy it off me, I'll take 50 quid but don't mention it to Wayne. Okay, here comes the demonstration of the talking Braille dictionary for your entertainment. Braille code.
Running your shortcut.
F.
The letter F is made up of dots 1, 2 and 4. It also stands for the word from when spaced on its own.
Braille code.
Running your shortcut.
D.
The letter D is made up of dots 1, 4 and 5. It also stands for the word do when spaced on its own.
Braille code.
Running your shortcut.
E.
The letter E is made up of dots 1 and 5. It also stands for the word every when spaced on its own.
Not bad, eh? The great thing about this shortcut is that it is actually fairly simple to create. It's made up of 1. The dictate text element to grab the person's request. 2. A dictionary element that basically holds the entries for the letter and the associated Braille cell explanation. 3. An element to get the dictionary entries. 4. An element to compare the request from the person, essentially using one variable to find the needed dictionary entry. 5. Use of the Shortcut Zap Speed Text feature to allow the dictionary result to be read out. If anyone has a use for it, let the chaps know and Wayne can forward it over. To complete a full dictionary to incorporate Grade 2 Braille, Wayne would need a text or audio file for reference as he enters Braille into the Shortcut Dictionary. Once done though, it will be available for everyone across the world. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Not quite as beautiful as Sighty Guy Chris though. Oops, did I say that out loud? Once again, toodle pip for now. All my love to Sean, Tim, Stephen and especially that bonny lad Sighty Guy Chris.
Yeah, even Sighty Guy Chris gets a mention. If you're a regular listener to Tech Talk, you'll know what that's all about. And if you haven't checked out the show, then please do. All you've got to do is search for RNIB Tech Talk, wherever you found this podcast. That's it from me. Thank you so much for listening. I'm back tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. and also back on the podcast from 5. See you then.
The Daily Connect Podcast.